President Obama visits Jacksonville as a new poll finds Donald Trump beating Marco Rubio in Florida. Mayor Curry's pension reform plan moves ahead in Tallahassee. And UNF just edges out JU in a thrilling basketball matchup. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Catch the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, and now watch the show video on demand at tvjax.com, our new partner. Just ahead, all the top stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. You can get on the line now and join the conversation at 549-2937. Then later, it's a look ahead to this weekend's Great Flowering Tree Sale, the 29th annual here in town, plus saxophonist Jeff Coffin of the Dave Matthews Band. Hear why he's in the area, all of that ahead. But first, it's Friday. Time for our weekly roundtable as Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union is here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Claire Goforth, editor at Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
And our own WJCT analyst, John Burr.
Good to be here.
So good to have all of you here with us. Lots of big stories to discuss, from the mayor moving ahead his pension reform plan in Tallahassee to a one-point victory of the Ospreys over the Dolphins last night and more. But first this morning, President Obama is visiting Jacksonville today. He'll tour Jacksonville's Saft high-tech battery manufacturing plant. The administration saying the president is using this Westside factory as a backdrop to argue his economic stimulus package did what it said it would do: stabilize the reeling economy when he first took office and get it growing again. Meanwhile, Republicans vying to replace Obama debated again last night as a new Florida poll finds Donald Trump way out in front of native son Marco Rubio. At the same time, Governor Rick Scott denies he's in the running to be Trump's vice president should Trump be victorious. We're going to begin the hour as we take your calls on President Obama's visit and all things 2016. What do you think about the president's visit to Jacksonville? What are your thoughts about the 2016 field? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. And John Burr, that Saft plant opened in the fall of 2011. With money from the 2009 stimulus package that the president pushed through over a lot of opposition from Republicans who said it was too much money to spend in the wake of that catastrophic recession. What are your thoughts about the White House using this Saft plant as a backdrop to argue that the stimulus was money well spent?
Well, in this case, it was. And, you know, the proof is in what's happened there. It's been expanded. The plan is a huge success. It's provided a lot of good jobs for us. You know, but as we know, there are other things the government invested in that that didn't turn out so well. And those have become hot political issues also. So if they were looking for a poster boy for, you know, for investment in private industry, I think this is probably about as good as an example as you're going to find.
Now, Claire Goforth, at the same time that Barack Obama is coming to Jacksonville and talking about his investments in clean energy, a new poll out this week finds that on the Republican side, Donald Trump is far ahead of Florida Senator Marco Rubio among likely Republican voters. The state's winner-take-all March 15th primary is getting closer every day. Those candidates are on both the Republican and Democratic sides of the aisle really want Florida's 99 delegates. Your thoughts about the Republican lay of the land and also last night's debate for the Republicans?
Yes, last night's debate was an interesting dog and pony show. I feel like we're all really surprised that Donald Trump has made it this far. I mean, it's past the point of shock value. This is really going to happen. It looks as though Donald Trump is going to be the Republican candidate for president, and he may be the least electable candidate in history, which is great for Democrats, but, I don't know if he could possibly win the election.
Dan Scanlon.
Well, it's most interesting. I mean, as Rick Scott, our own governor, had in an op-ed piece back in January, he talked about the fact that when he ran for governor, he was a businessman and no one knew he was. And then he states that Chris Christie, elected governor of New Jersey, businessman. Ron Johnson, elected senator in Wisconsin, businessman, et cetera, et cetera. So he's making a point that you don't necessarily have to be a politician. Also, what was said earlier, we have a populist or a popular candidate here. I don't know if there's any real street cred, and that's what they were trying to hammer him last night on, his actual ability and his success in business, but you can't argue he's a billionaire.
We'll go to your calls in a moment on this at 549-2937. Claire.
He may be a billionaire, but he really is not a statesman by any measure. You know, you listen to him talk. Last night he said he doesn't believe anything they report on Telemundo. I mean, is this really who we want to be president of the United States? Someone who will say these shocking things in, let's say, a diplomatic negotiation. Can you imagine what would happen?
And as a native New York City kid, when the comment was made to him last night that he built Trump Tower with illegal aliens, I don't know if there was any response that could have denied that in any shape or form. He's got some ghosts in his closet, and he's not releasing his tax returns, so...
In this morning's Florida Times Union, there's an op-ed from a right-leaning columnist laying out the case, the dire case among establishment Republicans, John, of what needs to be done to stop Donald Trump, that if he becomes the Republican nominee, he will wreck, destroy, decimate the GOP as Republicans currently know it. Your thoughts?
Well, if they want to stop Donald Trump, they're about 3 months too late, I think. He is, you know, it was interesting to watch the dynamic last night on that debate. He was kind of standing in the middle with his two biggest challengers on either side of him, throwing insults at him at every, and he was kind of just swatting them away and not really giving them much credence and firing back in the meantime. I don't know if this is going to tear apart the Republican Party. It may change the Republican Party quite a bit. But if Donald Trump becomes president, the Republicans are going to embrace him. The same thing was said about Scott, actually, by the way, because he was an outsider who got the nomination in Florida and took the general election. Well, you know, now Governor Scott is embraced and everybody in the Republican Party loves the guy. So, you know, winning has a way of changing people's minds.
By the way, Rick Scott denying that he would be floated as a vice presidential consideration.
Yeah, I love his comment. He just enjoys watching the presidential campaign because it's, quote, fun to watch. But yet the last line of that op-ed piece that he wrote back in January was, as far as the government's concerned, we need a complete overhaul.
We're looking at Donald Trump, a comfortable 16-point lead over Marco Rubio in Florida. Donald Trump potentially could beat Texas Senator Ted Cruz in his home state of Texas. He potentially could beat Ohio Governor John Kasich in his home state of Ohio. Claire, go forth.
I feel sorry for John Kasich. You listen to him in the debates, and he is a very reasonable, level-headed person who speaks to the values of, I think, the majority of American people. The Republican Party, they've shifted so far to the right. That strong, highly voting faction has shifted the party so far to the right that I just feel like they're alienating the bulk of the population.
And do you see this as dooming their chances in a general election?
I think that's very likely that will, in fact, happen. And will the Republican Party split apart after this? There's a lot of people in the Republican Party that I've spoken with that are deeply ashamed by what has happened in their party. I mean, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, even, listening to them talk, the rhetoric that they spew, it's just full of hate and vitriol.
Let's go to you. Oh, John Burr, go ahead.
Well, that's a really good point. And, you know, I also think the thing about Trump is he is attracting people to politics who have been turned off to politics for years and years and years. People who haven't voted for years are coming out for Trump. So that's a wild card, and that's something the pollsters can't really get a feel for because they're always asking the people who voted before, how are you going to vote? They can't really poll the people who are coming out of the woodwork for Trump.
We want your calls on the 2016 election right now. President Obama's in town today. New polling on the 2016 race here in our state and more. 549-2937 is the number to join in. Tiffany is in Arlington. Hi, Tiffany. Good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning. I'm fine.
Yeah, go ahead.
My question is for anyone who is concerned. Yesterday, I came across a really horrendous, disturbing article, and now it's taking headlines. It's about Donald Trump being endorsed by a former Grand Wizard, and I would really, really love someone to address this, because if this is who we are supporting, evangelical Christian people, which I'm not from Florida, I'm from North Carolina, but I was raised Christian. So if this is who, and I'm African-American, so if this is who we are asking ourselves, someone who is being endorsed by hatred, who are we really saying that we're saving America from? Like, what is this America that we are trying to go towards? And I'll take my hands off the air.
All righty. That's Tiffany in Arlington. Thanks for the call. And I believe she's talking about Trump being endorsed by former KKK leader David Duke. Claire.
I have to stand up for Donald Trump on this one. You can't actually control who endorses you. It doesn't speak well to his values that someone who's a former Grand Wizard of the KKK would be inspired to endorse him, but you really can't blame the candidate for who comes out of the woodwork to say, I support you.
It's if he reacts to it. If he approves it, then he makes it his own.
Yeah. Absolutely, Dan.
And the number to join in this morning as we talk about the top stories of the week on the show is 549-2937. Right now, we want your calls on some other news and notes from the week. In particular, Mayor Curry's progress in Tallahassee, because also making headlines this week, the mayor's plan to allow Jacksonville to extend the city's half-cent sales tax to help pay down the city's massive police and fire pension debt moved one step closer to reality this week. The Florida House passed a bill, voting 86-23, allowing the city to extend that tax that would now expire in 2030. Curry's plan will allow the voters to ultimately decide whether to repurpose the Better Jacksonville plan tax after it expires in 2030. Our unfunded pension liability, as we talk about this a lot on the show, John, you know this number, sits at nearly $2.6 billion. Curry got a win this week.
He did. And, you know, it's a testament to his connections in statewide in the Republican Party. And this is something that, you know, our former mayor, Alvin Brown, never could have pulled off. I mean, you know, frankly, he just doesn't have the wherewithal to push that through the legislature like Curry did. So it's a big win for Curry. No doubt about it.
Dan Scanlon.
Well, obviously, this is one little step up in what's going to be a much larger step. The Senate still has to work on it. The Senate bill apparently has some differences, and if they can't come to an agreement, then it'll be dead before it even hits the governor's desk. The governor has not stated any support or denial of this, and then you still have to get it past the voters, and then, by golly, it's 2030 when this takes effect, although apparently it will just continue the sales tax. So as a citizen, you may not notice it other than wish it was not there anymore.
Yeah, and that's right, Claire. As Dan points out, even if Lenny Curry gets this all the way through the process, then if the voters voted down, then we're back to square one.
We are, and I don't think the city can afford that. We've had our credit rating downgraded, and that's a really bad thing for Jacksonville. We really need to move forward on this and figure out a solution. Is this the best solution? I do not know, but it feels like it's the most reasonable solution. Although it is somewhat amusing that a Republican mayor has the greatest traction to continue a tax.
And as the TU is also reporting this morning, a retirement system that allows city employees to switch from a pension plan to a 401k plan, a loophole in that plan has apparently been closed. That's another new item that we wanted to just make note of. Let's go to your calls about this, 549-2937. Jim in St. John's County. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, great. Go ahead.
I think what's frustrating for anybody outside here is to hear the pundits right now, your two guests, understand Trump. We love the fact that a hand grenade is being thrown out right now inside the Republican Party and basically any party, because it is not business as usual. We're so tired of it. You know, everybody's tired of just what has been going on, do-nothing Congresses, and I'll leave it with that. You know, that's why it's got to be blown up, because it's over.
That's Jim in St. John's County.
Well, you know, like I said a few weeks ago, Trump is tapping into what a lot of Americans want to say, but they don't want to say it out loud. He's tapping that inner chord of dispute. The Republicans certainly are not making life easy in Washington or for us. Neither are the Democrats. No one is agreeing. So maybe Trump, right, maybe needs to throw a grenade in the middle. But is he going to be the president? Then that repairs the damage from that grenade.
Yes, I mean, at what risk? Sure, maybe we do need to change the political landscape. And, I mean, clearly Citizens United is part and parcel with this problem. But I really think that it's a terrible idea to try to address this with the offices of the president.
And I would like to also pose this question. Can any president at this point bring the parties together?
Well, that's a great question, but, you know, we have to go through the process. And I think actually it's a sign of strength for our governmental system that this is happening. I mean, the fact that you can work within the system and create such a huge change is a huge, well, that's just a wonderful part of our system. I mean, a lot of countries, you'd have to do that pull off a change like this. You'd have to do it at the barrel of a gun, you know, and within our elective system, you can actually organize and do it peacefully.
And yet John Boehner decided he couldn't fight anymore and he quit.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Lots of emails and tweets. Richard emails the show. Back in the late 1960s, the association recorded the single Everything Old is New Again. After reading the ludicrous points of view on the op-ed page denigrating Trump, I had a flashback to 1976 when like-minded people of the day predicted the end of the GOP if Ronald Reagan became the nominee. On the other hand, here is a tweet from Julie. Trump appeals to an undeniably racist thread in our electorate. And here is a tweet about the pension situation. On the sales tax, Mayor Curry is just extending the debt by another 15 years instead of working on the problem now. Those are just a few of the emails and tweets we're getting. Let's go to Dilal on the west side. Dilal, good morning. Dilal, are you there? Okay, give us a call back. It's 549-2937. Janice in San Jose is with us. Hi, Janice. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great, thank you. Go ahead.
I'm an independent, so I don't identify with either party. You know, I want to keep my mind open. But I feel that President Obama did not lead us, especially when there were problems with law enforcement. And when you speak of Mr. Trump having vitriol and hatred in his speech, I don't see that. I don't see him spewing hatred or vitriol. If it's anger about not the country not being led properly, I just feel that President Obama has let us down as a leader, as a person that to unify the country. And if there's any hate or vitriol happening, it's with Black Lives Matter movement, where they are attacking people. I don't know any more hatred than attacking a white person because they're white.
Well,
I don't understand.
Since you're an independent, Janice, who will you can't vote in the primaries. Who will you vote for in the fall?
I don't always vote. And it's not about voting. That's why I'm an independent. I want someone who will lead our country. I feel that Obama has let us down that way. But I did want an example of the hate and the vitriol that you had said that Mr. Trump has spewed. Because when I look at the candidates and I look at Mr. Sanders and Hillary's having problems, and I look at all the others that have been on there, I do appreciate Mr. Carson. I've read his books. And I just wanted an example of the hate and vitriol that you attributed to Mr. Trump.
Okay. Thanks for the call. That's Janice in San Jose.
I don't remember anybody attributing hate and vitriol to Mr. Trump. Maybe one of the callers did, but nobody on this panel did. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No,
but,
it was me.
Oh, okay.
Well, then go ahead, Claire.
Okay, a couple of examples of the hate and vitriol that Donald Trump has been spewing for several months now. How about when I stood at the Jacksonville Landing and listened to him lead a crowd of thousands chant, build a wall, referring to the border with the United States and Mexico. He went on to say that he would force the Mexican government to pay for that wall. How about when he said that we should halt all Muslim immigrants to the United States? How about his comments about Megyn Kelly after she challenged him on his record with women? These are all examples of the hate and vitriol that Donald Trump has been spewing regularly.
And yet it's interesting, this week NBC News had their first interview with his wife, who stated that she sometimes and oftentimes disagrees and tells him so. And I find that, I wish I was a mite on the wall watching that one. I'd love to see that conversation.
I'm sure she's the first woman to ever disagree with her husband privately.
And she is herself.
just guess, wild guess there.
Oh, well, it's third wife. Who knows? He's disagreed with others and they're no longer his wife.
That's right. That's right. Let's go to Paige in East Arlington now. Hi, Paige. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Great.
I'm driving, so if I lose you, I'm sorry. I want you to know that, one, I appreciate your show.
Thanks.
I'm a Democrat, but not really because I want to be. Sort of like the caller before. I'm kind of independent, but I believe that we need another political party for those who have moderate views. I've been giving this election much thought. I never thought that Trump would get this far. But as a Democrat, I'm liking the fact that he is getting this far. But what I see from this is that, to me, and I'm just an average person, I'm a black female, I'm educated, I'm retired Navy, but what I see from this is that I can't see the Republicans letting Donald Trump get the nomination. He's not, I can't even akin him to Scott. What I see is them committing sabotage of sorts to their own party, because I think that if Trump gets elected, and some of the hate and some of the, and you're right, some of the people say he does say some of the things that people just won't say because they think it's PC. But if he gets elected, what will we be like? And what will that do to the Republican Party in the long term? We already have a lame duck Congress. So if he gets elected, will more Republicans be put out as governors and senators, and then we have the same thing over again? I can take my answer off.
Okay,
there.
Yeah, that's thank you. And that's Paige in East Arlington. Well, she brings up the specter that's been raised again and again, it's been knocked down again and again too. But that for the first time in more than 50 years, we could actually see a brokered political convention this summer. If Donald Trump keeps pulling about 35% primary after primary, and they get all the way to Cleveland, and he does not have a clear majority of delegates, that is a possibility. A brokered convention, as the party elders try to deny Donald Trump that nomination.
Well, I'll tell you, if we get to that point, and it starts to smell like the thing's rigged and against Donald Trump, that will tear apart the Republican Party.
Yeah, it'll be like Chicago in 1968 for the Democrats.
That's probably the worst scenario for the Republican Party. They have got to let this process play out, whether they like the guy or don't like the guy. You know, the process has got to be absolutely pure, or you know, they are in deep trouble.
I mean, your moderate Republicans who are running for president are all gone. The ones that might have conceivably been the healers who might have worked and reached across the aisle, although they didn't say it publicly, they're gone. I mean, Jeb Bush would have been the golden boy to many people, and he left after getting, 8% polling?
Well, Kasich is still around, so.
Yes. Yeah, but.
But no, I don't think for much longer.
I mean, Ben Carson last night requested, please, somebody send some controversy my way, please. Ask me a question that's controversial. He wants something, but...
Yeah. Well, let's make a note of a couple of other items that caught our eye this week. Dueling news conferences on the South Bank the other day, one from the local NAACP, one from Superintendent Nicolai Vitti, as NAACP leaders called on the Duval County School Board to place more attention on the district's low-performing schools, pointing the finger at Dr. Vitti, saying he has weak leadership. Dr. Vitti held his own news conference, pointing out that more local schools have improved their performance under his leadership. That continues to be a contentious situation on the South Bank. John Burr.
You know, it's sad because you see these guys throwing mud at each other. You know, they're not focusing on what needs to be focused on, which are the students at Duval County and how do we improve their education. You know, about a month ago, Vitti came out with a program, a billion-dollar program to upgrade the schools, fix the broken schools in the inner city, build some new schools, upgrade technology in the classroom. You know, that got about 3 days of discussion, and since then we've been talking about, you know, snotty emails back and forth, and who's going to apologize to who, and mm-hmm. you know, we're way beyond, we're way past where we ought to be. We ought to just be focusing on the kids.
Claire.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, John. You know, people are expecting VD to change a legacy of decades in the making in 2 short years. It's just, it's dissolved into a bloodbath, and I feel sorry for him. Who would want to be superintendent of Duval County Schools at this point if this is the way we treat them?
Well, many people have wanted to, because we have had, in how many superintendents have we had in the Duval County School District in the past 20 years, and how many times have they butted heads with a school board?
Oh, everyone.
Everyone, well, and they've been fired.
And but you know what? If you look around the country, that it's a common issue. Superintendents in big city school districts tend to have a shelf life of about 3 to 5 years. Because of these very types of problems.
But if you're, as John said, if you are truly concerned about the students, then the school board and the superintendent need to start working together. They need to start voting on some of these proposals or denying them, but do a concrete action, because the kids are going to be the victims, the parents as well. And 20 years from now, and when Duval County is finding that it has poorly educated adults who cannot hold jobs, then the whole business
Still has,
unfortunately.
Maybe we should make superintendent an elected position.
Well, that's been brought up off and on, but hasn't happened yet. Again, that would require a heavy political lift.
It would.
And there are some horror stories about elected superintendents coming head-to-head with the unions in major cities where unions really have a hold.
Let's go to Linda in Bay Meadows as we discuss the schools issue. Hi, Linda. Good morning.
Good morning. As you know, this is a passionate issue for me. I'm just so frustrated that we're talking about this at 9 a.m. I would like to call out the school board members who've been on the school board through the last 5 superintendents. If they think they could do a better job, why don't they throw their name in the hat to actually do the job instead of micromanaging somebody with better credentials? This is a difficult thing. What they need to focus on is, I as a taxpayer need Dr. Beatty to develop greater schools so that we can get more businesses with a broader tax base in, with people to buy houses for more property tax, so we can get the money we need to improve schools. Dr. Beatty didn't create this problem on the north side. This has been there when it was designated as an addiction. So for many of the school board members, and it just turned into a diatribe on TV, and I just wish that they would pull up
Alrighty.
And do the job that they've been elected to do. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks, Linda. Michael on the north side. Go ahead, Michael.
I just want to make a comment real quick. Someone mentioned that the shelf life of a superintendent is often 3 to 5 years. My wife is actually a teacher. One of the complaints that I've heard from her is, unlike years ago when a principal was allowed to stay in a school for 7 or 8 or 9 years and establish a rapport and establish a climate in the schools, that doesn't seem to be happening anymore. We have principals that are turning over very quickly, and they aren't having an opportunity to build a rapport with the students or the teachers. So I just wanted to get that comment on the air. I don't know if there's anything that can be done.
Okay.
But I think that that's something that's worth mentioning.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry to hear that, too. Mm-hmm. Let's take one more call. Mary in San Marco. Go ahead, Mary.
Yes, these problems are definitely countrywide, and I believe that it is rooted in the parenting in America today. But there's an old saying that the teachers are afraid of the principals are afraid of the superintendent's afraid of the school board is afraid of the parents, and the parents are afraid of the children, and the children are afraid of nobody. And that pretty much sums up why there's that loss of control. The inability to fail someone to give a student honest feedback when they haven't worked hard by failing them is also, I think, the second biggest factor. And because the money that's being made nationally in the educational system the system is being rigged to make money and not address those very first two problems.
Okay. Mary, thanks for that.
You know, afraid of the children. We have had a number of children, of students bringing guns to campus in the past few months. The school board's somewhat reluctant to pass that information unless we get a tip on it. So there is a concern that you are getting afraid of the children when we've had four, five, six, and then all the bomb scares we had as we led into the Christmas break. Obviously, pranks from students, but that disrupted multiple schools in this district for an hour or two as they're standing outside waiting.
Yeah.
You know, I think the dynamic that Mary described, it exists to some degree, but I think much more the schools are full of kids who want to learn, and the parents want their kids to get the best education possible. I think that's much more the majority than this culture of fear that she described.
And you know, we had a group of middle school students touring the Times Union yesterday, and these were some of the sharpest kids I have ever seen. They were all in uniform from a middle school, I believe, and they absolutely were nailing editors and reporters with questions.
Aww.
That's the good news.
That is good news.
There are some bright lights out there.
And speaking of kids in uniform, the Ospreys beat the Dolphins last night at JU. We're going to close with a fun story. Is Trent Mackey's two free throws with 2 seconds left in the game ensured UNF's 81-80 victory over JU. The Ospreys clinching their second consecutive Atlantic Sun regular season title. That was apparently a nail biter last night in the Swisher Hall.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, this is a huge rivalry, has been for years.
Yeah.
It's just fun. It's just fun to see college rivalries rise to this level of excitement.
Oh, yeah.
And, it's very cool.
So, and national implications,
to them.
Too.
Yes, absolutely. It was on ESPN3 for those who caught that game. And finally, our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week around the state. Luckily, never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now. Only in Florida, the hallucinogenics edition. Only in Florida do real estate agents find naked guys hanging out in the model homes they're trying to show prospective buyers. Yes, we always knew Florida's housing market was a little wacky, but this takes things to a new level, as JSO officers say they arrested 25-year-old Cecil Warner for burglary and indecent exposure after finding him naked in a model home on the city's south side. Warner had, yes, Dan?
But of course, they didn't know who he was initially because he didn't have a wallet on him.
That's right, and no ID.
Well, that's one way to stage a home.
He had apparently wandered in there, left his clothing in the house, and then kind of wandered around naked. He brought some of the fake food boxes. It's a model home, right? He brought them to a bench outside, hung out there for a while, went back inside. People saw him completely exposed through the model home window because, of course, the curtains are draped perfectly. Warner admitted to taking more than 10 MDMA pills. That's Molly to you and me.
Yes.
Speaking of illegal controlled substances, only in Florida do sleeping men found with a bag of crack dangling from their mouth tell the cops they have no idea where it came from. Yes, in Vero Beach, police hauled 45-year-old Eric Smith off to jail and charged him with cocaine possession after finding him in the stairway of an apartment building. Smith was fast asleep and had the telltale bag of white powder in his mouth, but he told police he had no idea how it got there. So,
I didn't know crack was a depressant.
Hey, one more bright light, Melissa. Tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., 14 students from Northeast Florida will compete in the Times Union Regional Spelling Bee.
Yay!
And I'm the pronouncer, so I'm going to get a chance to actually work with a group of students who are excelling in their counties. That's really nice.
Oh, Excellent. That's wonderful. Come on out and see Dan Scanlon
main
at the
library.
Spelling Bee at the Main Library tomorrow.
No, see the kids.
And the kids. Thank you, Dan, John Burr, and Claire Goforth. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Later, saxophonist Jeff Coffin of the Dave Matthews Band, but up next, it's the Greenscape Great Flowering Tree Sale. Back in a moment.
With the Oscars on Sunday, a word here about the team behind the star.
It could range. You know, you could have voice coaches, image consultants, behavioral consultants, and everyone in between.
I'm Kai Ruzdahl. It's not easy being rich and famous, you know. That's next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Even in tough economic times, there are many local stories of success. I'm Karen Mathis with the Daily Record. On First Coast Success, I speak with Northeast Florida business executives and entrepreneurs about their experiences and accomplishments. Hear the interviews the last Monday of each month on First Coast Connect or on demand at wjctnews.org.
Brought to you in part by Iberia Bank.
The whole housing market is propped up on these bad loans. It's a time bomb.
On the next Fresh Air, the directors of two Oscar-nominated films for Best Picture. Adam McKay directed The Big Short about the 2008 economic collapse. And Tom McCarthy's film Spotlight chronicles the Boston Globe's investigation into priests who molested children and the church's cover-up. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
In 1927, the Supreme Court ruled that the Commonwealth of Virginia could sterilize Carrie Buck. Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes notoriously wrote, "Three generations of imbeciles are enough."
He didn't just uphold the Virginia law. He wrote really a clarion call saying, "We need to do a lot more of this. Our nation is at risk. Go to it."
Buck v. Bell and American Eugenics later on All Things Considered from NPR News. Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
It's been 22 years since Lori Garrett warned about microbes gone global.
We're a global village, and an outbreak that occurs of cholera in Bangladesh will soon be an outbreak in Lima, Peru.
I'm Ira Flatow. On Science Friday, we revisit that 1994 conversation and ask, has anything changed in the age of Zika and Ebola? All on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Greenscape of Jacksonville's 29th annual flowering tree sale is coming up tomorrow. Your chance to pick up a gorgeous flowering tree for your home or business for just a few bucks. Greenscape Executive Director Anna Dooley and Board Member Bob Chabot are here with a preview, and people mark their calendars for this, Anna. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, this is kind of like the opening of spring for Jacksonville. I know it's a little cool out there, but the sun is shining. We're expecting a fantastic sale tomorrow.
Okay, this is coming up tomorrow, bright and early. Bob, people really do line up early because the good stuff goes fast, doesn't it?
It'll go fast, and we're even having a pre-sale today. If you come out and join Greenscape as a member, you can get first dibs at everything from 3 to 6. But otherwise, people will be lining up by 6 a.m. in the morning for a 7 o'clock opening.
Wow, and thousands of trees and shrubs at $10 each. Magnolias, camellias, azaleas, crepe myrtles. And on and on and on.
It goes on and on, right?
The list goes on, and the material we've gotten this year, Bob has really sourced it out for us all from nurseries all over the state. It is beautiful, so I encourage everybody to get out there.
Now, when people come out and do this and spend their $10, they're supporting the work of Greenscape to keep our beautiful tree canopy in Jacksonville, right?
That's right. You know, our mission is to plant, protect, and promote trees, and we're 41 years old. We're credited with over 300,000 trees planted in Jacksonville. And we need to have some funding for that. We have no public funding through government sources. And so this is a small fundraiser, but I will tell you that we are not making very much money off of any of these trees or plants. They're great bargains.
Yeah. Well, how much would these normally go for?
Probably double what we're charging.
Okay. Yeah. And this is something that you can plant at your home or business that will last.
Oh, yeah.
A very long time.
These are all well-suited for this part of the state.
Okay, so this is happening bright and early tomorrow, 7 a.m. Now, you always do this at the intersection of Phillips Highway and Emerson. It's in a big open lot.
It's at Metro Square Office Park. And, Melissa, there's one thing new this year, and that is our partnership with Scenic Jacksonville. For Jack Stiggs Trees, we're going to have a photo opportunity there. This is a year-long challenge for people to plant trees and challenge their neighbors to do the same and improve our tree canopy.
Excellent. And this is the 29th annual. What a tradition.
It's great.
Yeah. So come on out tomorrow. It's the 29th annual Greenscape of Jacksonville flowering tree sale. For just $10. You can buy a beautiful flowering tree for your yard. And believe me, many people will be doing this. So get up bright and early. Be first in line. Go to greenscapeofjacksonville.org to get all of the information. And there's also a preview sale actually today at 3 o'clock. So that's something else to keep in mind.
That's right.
Thank you.
Anna Dooley, Bob Chabot, as always, great to see you. Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa, very much.
Still to come, saxophonist Jeff Coffin of the Dave Matthews Band. Find out about his performance on the JU campus.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
It's when you're at your very worst, into your rope fearful, alone, wearing a robe that doesn't even cover you fully. It's then that you may act in a manner that reveals who you really are. On the next Snap Judgment, we proudly present The Patient. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Now, this wasn't the first time that I was in completely over my head. I've counseled married couples on their sex life, and I've never had sex myself. I hear it's great.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour. True stories told live from the public radio exchange, PRX.org.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, Black History Month always generates information about fascinating African-American figures from the past. In today's edition of With All Due Respect, our occasional contributor Jay Solomon has a look back at the great Alexandre Dumas.
The Count of Monte Cristo, The Man in the Iron Mask, The Three Musketeers, novels that have enticed readers since the 19th century. But what's the connection with Black history? The story behind the stories begins in 1762, some 700 miles off the Florida coast in the mountains of what is now Haiti. In an era where both slaves and sugar were leading exports, a French renegade nobleman who ran one of the many sugar plantations had a son with Haitian slave Marie Dumas. 14 years later, to raise money to return to France and reclaim his family estate, the nobleman sold the son and his three siblings into slavery. Months later, the father repurchased the son and had him brought to France. Though black, the son, named Alexandre, was welcomed into the French aristocracy and sent to the best schools to learn literature, sword fighting, military arts, and how to be a gentleman. After 10 years of the good life, he had a falling out with his father, enlisted in the lowest ranks of the army, shortened his first name, took his mother's surname, and became Alex Dumas. His rise through the ranks was astounding. In recent years, an English writer described him as the first superhero, tall, handsome, a great swordsman, and utterly fearless. The égalité philosophy of the French Revolution embraced the young Dumas, who soon led a mixed-race unit called the Free Legion of Americans. Their daring operations earned many honors. Given more and more troops, Dumas led the battles opening the glacier-covered High Alps. At 32, he became the general-in-chief of the French Army of the Alps, commanding 53,000 troops, and ultimately the highest-ranking black commander of any white military ever, until America's Colin Powell became a four-star general 200 years later. And then, while returning from Egypt, Dumas was captured and placed in an Italian dungeon, where he languished for 2 years. He became very ill and was a broken man by the time he returned to his family near Paris. By then, Napoleon was effectively a dictator and refused to help Dumas in any way, even denying a pension. Napoleon was busy, you see, restoring slavery that had been abolished in French colonies during the Revolution, then installing harsh racial laws within France, demoting black and mixed-race officers to chain gang labor, closing integrated schools, and making illegal the marriages of those who, like General Dumas, had married a white French woman. In relative poverty, Dumas spent the last years of his life with his family, including a son born after his return home, another Alexandre. Soon, the general was largely forgotten. A large statue with him on horseback was eventually erected, only to be destroyed by the Nazis because of his mixed race. So, to the connection to books about black history. At the general's death, his son was just 4, but often heard stories of his father's life from his mother and family friends, which would be put to use when the child became Alex Dumas, the author. He also had his father's letters, such as the one detailing his bitter prison experience, the basis for the Count of Monte Cristo. The famous scene in The Three Musketeers in which D'Artagnan fights three duels in one day, that and many more stories would flow through the son's pen from the adventures of his father, a real-life black superhero. If General Dumas' story interests you, read Pulitzer Prize-winning The Black Count by Tom Rees, a detective story meets swashbuckler that uncovers previously unknown documentation of an incredible life. With all due respect, I'm Jay Solomon.
Jay Solomon is a retired broadcast executive and WJCT volunteer. Well, finally this hour, he's the saxophonist, bandleader, and composer with the much-loved Dave Matthews Band. The three-time Grammy Award-winning Coffin is in town this weekend. It's a special treat as he's giving a clinic, masterclass, and concert at Jacksonville University. Right now, we're pleased to welcome Jeff Coffin in studio. Pleasure to meet you. Good morning.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you, too.
Also with us, JU's Dean of the College of Fine Arts, Dr. Henry Rennie.
Good morning.
And the university's Jazz Program Director, John Ricci.
Good morning.
All right. So, Dave Matthews Band fans, and just fans of music as well, excited to see you in town. How did it come about that you'll be doing all this on the JU campus?
Well, Henry and I talked about my coming down with my group, the Mutet. And I do a lot of clinic work and working with students when I'm not on the road with Dave. And so we worked it out, and there was a free moment to be able to come down, and here we are.
And you want to translate what you do with the band, but also with your solo work to the students, is that right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So exciting for them to get to meet you and see how your process.
Yeah, that's interesting because I always talk about how they are in process, that we're all in process with music, and it doesn't matter, you know, what level you're at, you're still in process with it. And so I get to go and, you know, a lot of these students that want to be professional musicians sort of want to do what myself and the guys in the Mutet, you know, the guys in Dave Matthews Band, I played with Bela Fleck and the Flecktones for 14 years also. Mm-hmm. So they kind of want to do what we do and, you know, what I've had the opportunity to do. So I get to talk to them about, you know, working on fundamentals and how important relationships are and just kind of getting into the nuts and bolts of it.
Sure.
Kind of talking about life, but using music as the metaphor.
Dr. Rennie, so it'll be so inspirational for the students to see a working musician and with such a famous band. Jeff has his own solo band, but also mm-hmm. tours with the Dave Matthews Band. That's a really nice opportunity for your students.
It's fantastic. It's one of the things that we try to do in the College of Fine Arts is bring the professional working musicians, dancers, artists, etc., to our campus to interact with our students. We had Ken Burns a few weeks ago, yeah. Wes Chapman last fall, the ballet, American Ballet Theater dancer. You know, so I think Jeff is in that category of someone who has established himself as a career, and he offers to our young students, our musicians, something very positive.
And in particular, John Ricci, you head up the jazz program. Yeah. This will be an exciting thing when Jeff talks about jazz.
It is, and he's already done amazing things with our students in a clinic already, able to impart the kind of inspiring elements of what he's doing, which draws in everything you're going to hear in current music and puts it in the language of jazz in such a beautiful and literal way. And for them to hear them do that and actually express what he did was take it on the spiritual level even.
Wow. And
that's what's important for them. And, you know, to become commercial musicians, yes, but inspire commercial musicians and well-trained ones too.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's my understanding you've given hundreds of these music clinics at schools, colleges, mm-hmm. universities. Mm-hmm. This is a real labor of love for you, it sounds like. Yeah.
Yeah, I've done well over 300 of these.
Wow.
And I also teach at Vanderbilt now in Nashville where I live.
Uh-huh.
I started doing some stuff there in September of last year. So, music education has always been a really important part of what I do and probably the most important part of what I do.
What all goes on in the clinic?
Lots of stuff. Usually, if it's a solo clinic, usually I'll play solo for about 20 minutes, kind of throwing a lot of different stuff at the students. If it's with the Mutet, we'll usually play for, you know, 30 minutes or so, doing a few different tunes so they can kind of hear everybody and, you know, have the intimacy of being very close to where we are proximity-wise. And then we start a discussion. I usually ask them what they've heard, and we start a dialogue.
And then the master class is today. Is that right?
At noon.
Yeah.
At noon.
And how will that unfold?
I'm not sure if Future Man and I will be there. Future Man is the drummer, Roy Future Man Wooten from the Flecktones. And so he and I will be there sort of taking questions about music and this, that, and the other thing. Mm-hmm. We might play a little bit. We might just talk.
Yeah.
So it really goes a lot of different places. You know, there's people have a lot of questions about how to do what we do just kind of, you know, the nuts and bolts of all that stuff.
And then tonight on the campus, Dr. Rennie, a concert. So how can people take advantage of that opportunity?
Concert tonight, 7:30. We do have a website, the ju.edu. You can click to get tickets, but probably at this point, just come to the venue, come to campus, mm-hmm. and we'll get you in.
Yep.
Pretty exciting.
Yeah. And so the mutet is myself, Roy Futureman Wooten on drums, Felix Pastorius on electric bass, the son of Jaco Pastorius, mm-hmm. who, you know, a lot of people know from Florida as well. Chris Walters on keys and Bill Fanning on trumpet. And Henry and John are both going to sit in tonight as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very exciting, guys. Yeah. It's such a pleasure to have all of you in studio. He's Jeff Coffin. A rare opportunity. Go see him in concert with his band and all these amazing other musicians tonight on the JU campus, ju.edu for tickets and information. Jeff Coffin, Dr. Henry Rennie, and John Ricci all here from JU today to talk with us. Thanks so much for being here. Have fun.
Thank you very much.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And you can now watch the show as well. Video on demand at our new partner, TVJax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, a look at the week's top national news stories. That's coming right up. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.